Would you ever be with a guy who had a micro nation?
No. Welcome to Subscurity, the podcast about obscure subcultures. I'm Brenna.
And I'm Jordan. And today we're talking about micronations. So how closely have you been following the trials of the Jan 6 insurrectionists?
Oh, when you said Jan 6, like, why can't you just say January 6? Anyway, I was like, what the hell is the Jan 6? Like, not at all. Not very closely, if I'm being honest. I try to compartmentalize the Trump era in my mind.
Do you know what, like, one of the primary legal defenses that the people who are currently being brought to court are using as their defense?
Oh God, freedom of speech?
No, they're claiming that they're sovereign citizens. Have you heard of this?
No. God.
Stop being so annoyed.
Well, fuck the insurrectionists. Yeah. Like, if this is about them, like,
no,
I'm not
going to,
okay, I'm not going to have
calm
any
down.
Empathy.
Calm down.
Fuck those people.
No, but they're claiming they're sovereign citizens, right? Which is this idea that they have, and I'm sure that no actual attorney would suggest they follow this defense, but they're mostly self, you know, defending themselves in court. But it's this idea that they are their own sovereign citizens, which means that they do not obey the laws of sovereignty of the nation state that they live in.
Well, duh, you don't want to be governed by the man.
Right. They can pick and choose the laws that they want to follow, basically.
Obviously.
Yeah. So
that's how we all should live, isn't it not?
Okay. Well, if welcome to our libertarian podcast.
Just say, yeah.
No, so that is like, that is this kind of idea that is happening as these people are trying and failing to present this argument in court. Now, the failing for them is resulting in misdemeanors anyways, because, you know, why the fuck do we care that a bunch of white people try to take over the government? That's fine. We're good with that. But it is a legal defense that they're trying to mount. It relates to something I actually want to talk about.
Yeah, where's the segue? Where are we going with this?
Which,
Jordan,
is the concept of micronations, or nation states that are essentially tiny little nations of sometimes like small as one or two people that have declared sovereignty within their borders. And believe themselves to be their own nation state separate from the geographical entity.
Basically what Texas wants to do is secede. So I know
that's a little different.
It's a little different, but similar vein.
And Texas did try to succeed.
Secede, not succeed.
No, they tried to succeed at seceding, and they did not succeed. but no, so micronation is a political entity. They claim to be independent. They're mostly geographically very small, but like as small as like half a square foot in some cases to...
Can you live in a half a square foot, or is it just someone's like front yard?
Yeah, it's like... I planted a flag there, right?
Pretty much, yeah. Yep.
To as big as 500,000 square miles. In this case, the micronation of West Arctica. Someone has declared sovereignty over it.
One person?
That's my understanding.
Oh, nice.
Okay. In fact, that's a good question. But usually, micronations are the outgrowth of a single person. It's almost always a single person that is the genesis of this, although other people may then follow them into that political entity.
Well, with that, I do declare this is my sovereign nation, and you must obey all my rules here. Get out.
Enforce that.
Number one, get the fuck out of here.
And so, like you said, you related it to the Texas secession movement, or really just any secession movement, but they are considered pretty distinct from that in that they're so trivial in terms of size and power and impact, right? That most nation states that they exist within just don't care. They don't have to act on it, right?
Because it's just, you know, you don't have enough power for someone to, like, i.e. lead an insurrection, because you're not going to have enough like-minded people. Mm-hmm. Theoretically, it's just one person, and it's like, Who cares, crazy person?
Right.
Yeah, Do whatever you want.
You have your little house that's technically in our land. Fine. Just keep paying taxes.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah. Right. So, yeah. So it is considered to be harmless by the nation states that generally they operate within, generally speaking. But on the other hand, they often take themselves very seriously in that there are multiple instances of them minting their own currency, making their own flags, postage stamps, passports, medals, you know, things you would, insignia that you would give to high members of the state and so forth. So they have it's cosplaying, only taking it to kind of the next level of having an entire country that you have created and
no one else recognizes.
That's not necessarily true. Other micronations often do recognize them as well.
Is there like a United Micronations, a UMN?
There are kind of communities of micronations, yes. That said, there's kind of a split within the community in that some micronations, especially the bigger ones, try to get international recognition from actual nations, right? Right, like the United Nations, mm-hmm. or the Geneva Convention or something. But then you've got the smaller, like the less impactful ones who try to just show recognition between each other. Mm-hmm. As more of a solidarity movement, right? Like, you also are fighting the man and I'm fighting the man, so we're kind of on the same page, right?
Yeah.
So, like, for example, the one that we'll probably end on or get, maybe we'll just talk about it a little later, but the most famous of which is Sealand, if you've heard of that one.
No, where's that?
It's off the coast of England.
Okay.
And we'll get to it in a bit, but that's probably the most famous one. They consider themselves a sovereign state. Meanwhile, there's other ones such as Flandrensis, I don't know where that is, or Molossia, which I think is in Nevada, that have no intention of ever being recognized as real states. They just are declaring sovereignty for themselves and they don't care what the international community has to say.
What's the point of that? Is it just taking a stance of, I don't like the society I'm in and the government rule and I'm just... What are you hoping to accomplish, I guess, especially if it's just you and you're not trying to if you're not one of the bigger ones with kind of a movement happening around you, what's their end goal? Like, there's so many people who are unhappy with the government, the way things are run. And it's, you know, I think a very normal feeling. So what's the end goal here?
So I think it depends on who you're asking about. And I think I'll cover a bunch of different ones and kind of get the whole picture. That said, you've participated in one of these before, and so I'm curious what your thoughts were on that.
Although no, I haven't. What are you talking about?
You at one point went through, it was renamed later, but someone once declared it the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone.
Oh, yeah. as a
distinct micro, it's essentially a micronation, right? A distinct sovereign state within the borders of the United States, but its own state. Now, obviously, that was
part of a bigger movement,
and it was better named later, the Capitol Hill Occupied Protest, and
it went from Chaz to Chop, right? It went from bad to still pretty bad.
Yeah, but you know, I think the bigger difference was Chop. I think was a better way of describing what it was, right? Was, we are protesting, we are occupying this area and protesting.
Yeah, autonomous zone wasn't great.
Right. Autonomous zone implies insurrection. It implies secession, right? It implies, this is my territory. I'm no longer a member of the governing body that it exists within, right? They're different things.
I want to clarify, I didn't identify as a member of CHOP.
No, but you would visit.
But I would go there, yeah. I would protest there. So yeah, fair. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. But I mean, so that, now that is a very, that's a political movement driven one, and not all these are political movement driven ones, but you know, that is an example of something where they had a point or an agenda.
They definitely had an agenda. They had things they wanted to accomplish, goals they wanted to accomplish, and they had an entire community and they wanted to build power and
a better society.
A better society. Yeah. So that, the goal is clearly laid out and they had goals and kind of a community built around that. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. And I think if you look back at the kind of the history of these, they often are politically motivated in some fashion or another. Now, the politics are different every time.
Yep.
Most of them, as far as I can tell, kind of started late 60s, early 70s. Like, that's when the kind of this movement or this idea started.
These hippies.
Basically. Yeah. Except not hippies, because the first few ones were mostly
like libertarians. Oh, that makes total yeah. I'm thinking as soon as yeah. you start talking about it, I'm thinking Ron Swanson from Parks and Rec.
Right, exactly. I don't
belong to your government. Quintessential, yeah.
But yeah, and Ron Swanson is a fantastic character. Like as far as like caricatures go, it yes. yeah, it perfectly embodies that libertarian spirit, or he perfectly embodies that.
But I know people like.
So do I. I grew up with a very passionate libertarian friend who is now an incredibly passionate leftist liberal, somewhere in between. But he and his father were, or his father was a strong libertarian, and kind of he inherited those political values and norms from him until kind of the college age changed him. But
yeah. I don't know if my dad would identify as a libertarian. He's very much an independent, but like he is totally that person off the grid. I don't need anyone knowing from what is this? What is an iPhone? Like, and he lives in the woods and he kind of embodies that off the grid kind of blue collar, you know, kind of libertarian belief system in some ways, not yeah. every way, but.
And I would say not all of these were blue collar. Like it, like one of the first ones was called Operation Atlantis, which started in the early 1970s from a New York based libertarian group. Now, it's not fair probably to assume that because they're in New York, they're not necessarily like blue collar, right? Like New York has two very
worlds,
different
yeah.
sides, right? Between like New York City and the rest of in New York, right? But kind of everything from the implication of it is that it was a bunch of like New York wealthy people who didn't want to have to pay taxes. They built a concrete hulled ship called Freedom, and they sailed to the Caribbean. And if I can pause there too, like on our whole pronunciation debates, Caribbean.
It's completely contextual. Pirates of the Caribbean. I'm going to the Caribbean.
Yeah, but why?
Because it is. No, you don't.
The
think...
pirates are in the geographic area. No, I don't have a strong preference on either one. I just don't understand how we use two different pronunciations for the same area.
That's just how the modern world works. And get over the. There's a difference between having two pronunciations that are both accepted for a word and being wrong in your pronunciation, which is what you were in our last episode when you meant to say bipedal, but you said bipedal.
Bipedal is the way people in Britain pronounce it.
We're not in Britain, you fucking idiot. You just said
but
it wrong.
But they invented our language, so I think we should show some deference.
God.
Or as you would say, deference.
Don't turn this around. Get back to these weird
so
libertarian.
They built a concrete hulled ship called Freedom. They sailed it to the Caribbean. They intended to basically anchor it somewhere in the ocean there as their territory. Unfortunately, there was a hurricane and the ship sunk and they had to abandon the project.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah, poor guys. But similarly, there was another one, 1972, called the Republic of Minerva. They tried to build a small man-made island on the Minerva Reefs, which is south of Fiji.
Ooh.
So kind of South Pacific.
Tropical. I would get there.
Unfortunately for them, they were shortly thereafter invaded by troops from Tonga, who annexed them.
Nice.
And then destroyed the island.
Nice.
So it didn't last long. But you can see like there was this kind of, you know, if the hippies had a counterculture movement, right, kind of protesting the Nixon era around that time, right,
yeah,
of the United States, this was kind of the other half of that coin, which is also countering culture, but countering kind of the political and economic influences of the government and trying to set up kind of their own territory.
And I mean, really, tell me if I'm wrong here, but it's really no different than how any country was formed, right? Like you think about the U.S. minus the genocide, but like think about the seceding from.
just ignore that little
about
part
that.
Of that. Yeah.
But like
my school did, so why shouldn't we?
Everyone yeah. did, and yeah. like all the white people did.
Yeah.
But in terms of, you know, the fight against Britain and becoming your own country, obviously that's a much.
But it was over taxes.
Yeah, but it's yeah. a macro
no, I'm
version
agreeing
with
you. Of
it,
yeah.
and like
yeah.
they are obviously we are recognized as an actual country, and you know. Quite a big area. What's your face?
No, that you said you a doing? Macro version of it. It's funny. Do you know what micronations call like major nation states like ours?
Macronations,
yeah.
Nice.
They're the same principle. That
nailed it. Well, it's basically a yeah. successful version of what they're trying to do.
It's their version.
Real nations and micronations.
It's their version at scale.
Yeah.
Is how, yeah.
With success.
We have a little late. This one goes into the 90s. And we'll get back. Like, I'm going to jump around in history here. But in the 90s, we had the Principality of Fredonia, which was a micronation also based on libertarian principles. It was started as a hypothetical project by a group of teenagers in the United States in 1992. Because, you know, nothing's better than college libertarians. Yeah, the project basically formalized this idea in 1997. And they didn't actually have any land. They just were declaring sovereignty as a nation without any territory to go along with it.
But if you're a part of it, you have sovereignty. It's like this collective without a space.
Exactly. And so what did they try to do? They tried to find a space. So they attempted in 2001 to lease territory from a place called Somaliland. That you'd look confused because you're thinking, no, the place is called Somalia. Well, you're right, but Somaliland is an unrecognized sovereign state within the Horn of Africa that most of the international community considers to be part of Somalia.
Nice.
So again, it's they're recognizing the unrecognized as well, right?
Yeah.
So they tried to basically cut this deal with a road company in Somaliland and the Sultan of Somaliland at the time to basically say, let the road company build roads in there, and the road company is going to give us some of that territory that they're building roads through, and the Sultan will say, okay, this is an economic free area where you can operate.
Oh my God.
Unfortunately, just didn't really fall through. I guess the Sultan ended up deporting members of the road company for like falsifying passports or something. It's very confusing.
Wait, he deported them from his
imaginary
micro
country.
I was like, all right.
Correct.
Just want to make sure I'm following.
And it led to protests in that region because I think there was like economic incentives to having the roads developed, right? Like, it was a bigger impact than kind of this hilarious story makes it sound. And unfortunately, it actually led to the death of at least one person there.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So there was real consequences to this. Meanwhile, Fredonia was fine because they were in the United States, not a real nation there. And we're continuing to do things like minting their own currency and offering those coins for sale on the internet.
It just like I kind of shake my head because, well, I think there are definitely times it's necessary. You look at the course of human history and how countries are formed and, you know, people seceding. I mean, it makes total sense, like where the desire comes from. But I mean, you really need scale and you really need to like gather the masses, and it's just like you're gonna mint your own currency. What the fuck are you gonna buy with it? Like, do the 5 people or 10 people in Fredonia, like, I mean, do you all have the goods you can trade? One of you is gonna farm for everybody? Like, are you just abandoning society altogether? Does that mean you're not gonna have a cell phone and communicate to the non-Fredonians? I don't know. I know I'm getting like extreme with it, but it's just kind of why. How's
that econ degree working for you? Just seem a little frustrated over there.
It's just so stupid. Sorry. Yeah. It's not, I get it.
You get it depending on the application.
I get it depending on the application and just like the practicality of being able to do something with it. It just seems like a waste of time. And I say that kind of tongue in cheek because I fully support people like actually following through on what they believe in. Like, I actually admire that it's so easy to say you believe in X, Y, Z and actually to go out and live it. Like, maybe that's just what's more foreign to me, is like there's things people find frustrating, but you don't actually do anything about it. These people are doing something about it. But if you can't actually produce, you know, what you intend to produce out of it or like make any traction within society, like, what's the point? That's how you're going to spend your time minting currency that no one's going to recognize?
Well,
what for?
I think the cynical take, and probably the accurate one, frankly, and at least in Fredonia's case, is that currency is merchandise, right?
Yeah.
They've created a fantasy for people to pay into.
Like Bitcoin.
Hey, Bitcoin is a great investment, especially if you get free Bitcoin accidentally from certain companies and you get to just sit on that cash investment. I'm not rich, though. Don't come for my Bitcoins.
Mm-hmm. He did win the lottery, though.
That's true.
$14? Speaking of Fredonia.
Yes.
It does remind me, I don't know if this is on your list, Cascadia. Is that on your list at all?
So Cascadia's a little different. It's not on my list, but again, Cascadia is a secession movement. Right?
Yeah, and it's an idea, and it's not, like, I don't think people, as far as I know, maybe there's some. Yeah, no one's actually claimed Cascadia, but basically, for those who don't know, it's kind of the people who want to secede Washington, Oregon, and California.
And parts of British Columbia.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like Vancouver.
There's like a Reddit, a subreddit for Cascadia.
Yeah.
I wouldn't hate it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because it is this idea of being it's not something that I had researched, but I know about Cascadia, yes. And you're like the idea of having a region, like a nation state that is also geographically defined by a similar, like within the same region, right? Like there are advantages in the sense of community and values and, well, yeah, community and values, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Tired of your bullshit, Texas.
Right, exactly, right? Now, I'm the kind of person who for a long time would be like, well, the red states need to pay attention to like what the blue states are doing from a, like, we're subsidizing your lifestyles, right? But like, on the other hand, I think there is some truth to how like food production works and things like that, that funnel back, right? So I do think it is a little more muddled than Twitter would say, let's say, but... Yeah. But yeah, the idea that I think the principle of Cascadia and other movements like it is the exact same. It's just, again, a matter of scale. It's I have this idea of culture and geographical region and how that should define me and the people I live with. And
it's fun to talk about, but you need a leader and then actionable steps to make it happen.
Yeah. Well, and at the scale that would talk about, like, you need nation states and you need military and you need trade agreements and you need border enforcement.
Yeah. And unless, in reality,
you believe in open borders, but
then in reality you look at Brexit, like all the people who thought that was a great idea, like, wait a minute, I didn't think about any of these like practical implications through, and oh, it turns out it was a terrible idea. Like, again, I kind of say it as a joke, like, oh, Cascadia does sound nice, but in reality people totally overlook all the downstream impacts and all the things that go into actually becoming your own nation.
But it's a fun thought exercise, right?
It is, yeah.
And I think in a lot of these, examples, people just took that fun thought exercise and said, okay, I'm going to take a couple extra steps.
Yeah.
But at the scale of one or two people, who the hell cares, right? Like, you just can't execute it when you're at the scale of Cascadia.
Right. I want to hear more. So you've talked about a little bit of the bigger ones. What about the one person sovereign states?
Okay, so Republic of Rose Island, that was an artificial island constructed in 1968 by a man named Giorgio Rosa. He was Italian. I don't know if that was an Italian accent, but he was Giorgio Rosa. So he built this artificial island in the Adriatic Sea. He built it as a tourist attraction, but pretty much as soon as it was done, he declared sovereignty and made it the Republic of Rose Island. The following year, the Italian Navy dynamited it, and that was it.
That's terrible.
So, I mean, this is the problem. Like, you're playing with fire, depending on where and how you're doing it.
Sorry to interrupt your flow, but like, do you have any stories of people who have, even though they live in, say, the U.S., they have successfully fought a court case and identified as successfully gotten the recognition, at least in a legal sense, or you didn't?
No, I don't think there is really examples of that. The closest, we can just jump to this one, the closest, and the reason why it's probably the most famous, is Sealand, and that's not in the United States, but it's off the coast of Britain. So Sealand's interesting, and it did sort of get recognition. I'll explain how in a second, but so the Principality of Sealand is built on a World War II anti-aircraft platform in the North Sea that at the time it was built was beyond Britain's territorial limit. So the way Britain declared sovereignty was within 3 miles of its shore at the time it was built, right? So back in World War II.
Yeah.
And at that time, Nazis were using aircrafts that called, and I'm going to butcher German pronunciation, but called Kriegsmarines. And those were aircraft that would drop mines from the air into the water. And their goal was to basically destroy the British shipping lanes. Right?
Okay. Yep.
And so in order to protect those shipping lanes, Britain constructed these anti-aircraft platforms. And you can, like, think of them as like a floating pontoon.
Okay.
With giant like superstructure columns of cement, basically, and then like a flat platform on top.
So I literally imagine it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I can also show you a picture. But was it close? Did I define it? Describe it pretty well?
It was okay. It was a little different than I imagined.
Yeah, but
it was an aphantasia joke.
You're rude. They're not huge, right? But they were there to basically shoot down planes.
Yeah.
And so the 3 miles that off the coast that Britain declared their own waters, these were often placed beyond that because they had to protect shipping lanes, right? So anyways, it gets built. World War II happens. World War II ends. The structures get mostly abandoned. They're just sitting there, right?
Yeah.
In 1967, a pirate radio group seized it as a place to broadcast their radio operations.
Nice.
Yeah. Which pirate radio, by the way, is a subtopic I would love to get into at some point.
I didn't know that was a thing. Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. And 2 years later, it was then captured by a different group. And I don't know that there was combat between the two of them. I think it might have just gotten abandoned and then recaptured by a different group. But it was captured by a man named Major Paddy Roy Bates. And his goal was to broadcast a pirate radio station called Radio Essex. And he declared his new nation as the Principality of Sealand. And this is about... I think it's like 7 miles off the coast of Suffolk.
How many kilometers is that?
3 something.
Sure.
Wait, no, did that backwards. 15-ish. I don't know.
Someone, I actually think 15 is actually right.
Yeah,
because I've done a 15K, and I think it was like 7 point something miles. It's like that tracks.
It's like a miles, like 3.2 kilometers or something. Yeah, I can't
something remember. Like that.
Anyways, fuck if I know. The point is, freedom units. It was about 7 miles off the coast. So it was international waters, right? When it was built, it was captured. Blah 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 blah. The story gets kind of funny from there because a man who was basically associated with this Sealand principality, a man named Alexander Achenbach, he was from Germany, he I guess had some sort of conflict with Major Paddy Roy Bates, even though they were both part of Sealand, and he hired several German and Dutch mercenaries to actually lead an attack on Sealand while Bates and his wife were in England. So I guess they had left on holiday to another country called England, is how you might put it.
Smart.
Yeah. And Achenbach, and I'm sorry for pronunciation, but Achenbach
sounds right.
Okay. It sounds right. It's German. So
Achenbach.
He hires these mercenaries, and basically his goal was he wanted to capture it, Sealand, in order to turn it into a luxury hotel and casino with his fellow German and Dutch businessmen rather than just the pirate radio station broadcasting this point. So these mercenaries literally storm the platform with speedboats, personal watercraft, helicopters, and they take Bates's son, Michael, hostage.
Damn.
Michael then is able to retake Sealand, basically breaks out of his containment.
What?
Fights through it, recaptures Sealand and Achenbach, and the mercenaries using weapons that he had stashed on the platform.
How many fucking mercenaries?
I don't know,
were
but
there?
This, like, I don't know how Die Hard has not made a movie out of this. Like, how has the franchise skipped this?
Yeah, that's crazy. Right. I was held hostage, and I did not break out in that same fashion.
How are you held hostage?
It's a story for another time.
Yeah, I do know that story. Yeah, so he was. He captures Sealand back and the mercenaries and Achenbach. And Achenbach, he then charges Achenbach with treason against Sealand
and
holds him hostage.
I just don't understand how. I'm still like, I can't wrap my mind around how one person overtakes like all these other people.
I know.
You have a machine gun, presumably. At least someone of the other, I don't know, dozen or so people also has a machine gun.
I gotta think it's something like. Like, if you're a let's take a step back here, right? Let's paint this picture appropriately. you're a mercenary.
Right.
You kill somebody for money.
Right.
That's your god job. Right? Really not really like kill, but you're like, you fight wars for money. Yeah. Maybe the better way to put it. If some random German dude comes up to you and says, hey, I'm part of a country called Sealand. It operates off a platform 12 miles off the coast of Britain.
Are you saying it wouldn't attract the like most vicious mercenaries?
I'm saying that. And also if the situation I was describing you was, I need you to capture one person who lives on an old anti-aircraft platform, I'd be like, yeah, I got it. Like, yeah. That's easy money, right?
You could underestimate.
And, yeah. Well, and it's that. And then you get there and the guy's got machine guns, bazookas, whatever he had, right? And it's like, fuck this. I'm not fighting. This is not worth it. Right. You got me. Like, game's up. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. That's how I imagined it went down. Anyways, so Michael then holds Achenbach hostage for $35,000 US dollars.
What year was this again?
1978.
What's that with inflation?
Fuck off. Germany then sent a diplomat. So this is where it gets interesting. Germany sends a diplomat from its London embassy to Sealand to negotiate for Achenbach's release. And after several weeks of negotiations, Roy Bates at this point had returned to Sealand. Roy Bates, you know, let him go. And he basically, Roy Bates's claim was, they sent an official member of their government to my country to negotiate release. That is de facto recognition of Sealand as a nation.
Not necessarily. I would disagree with. I get where he's coming from, yeah. But I think you could easily make the case against it. I mean, I think of it as any country intervening in another country, like whether just or unjust, you can rationalize that for any reason, just because it's quote unquote the right thing to do. It's usually centered around human rights, right?
Yeah.
Quote unquote. But that doesn't necessarily mean you identify it as a country or just intervening in a situation.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but
that's a first.
But Major Roy Bates would definitely disagree with you. There is kind of like a side story too that would further reinforce this point, though. Which is, at one point after, this was years after Sealand had been initiated, and he, at this point he created his own flag and currency and passports and all this stuff to like make it a real thing as far as he's concerned. The British government actually tried to summon him to court for this, right? Like, hey, stop.
Right? Yeah. And it's like, by doing that, you're recognizing that I am.
Well, no, because they're saying, you're our citizen. This is ours. You have to stop. Like, So they weren't. They were saying this. None of this is real. You need to come and you're doing something illegal. The court actually had to stop and drop the case because it was ruled that he actually was in international waters. Which, at the time, would have been past three miles of shore.
Yeah.
The laws changed, at least as of 1987, to like 12 miles. So since then, he is well within the Sealand is well within the jurisdiction of what Britain declares sovereignty over.
Yeah.
But at the time, they weren't able to enforce anything because he was outside of their territorial boundaries.
Wow.
And so, again, he's laying claim that he's international waters. He can do what he wants. So... not saying you have to buy it, but it is basically the most official recognition any of these micronations have gotten.
That's completely fair. And so since now, like in modern day, you said Britain's, their waters go beyond 12 miles, up to 12 miles. So currently, is Sealand still recognized? Or
I think it's, again, this is now at the point where it's like, who the hell cares?
Right.
Like,
does anyone still occupy Sealand?
Yeah. So, Michael Bates succeeded his father as... whatever the title is, king, fiefdom, king, ruler, prince, whatever.
Yeah.
He succeeded his father in 2012 when his father died at age 91. He reported in 2015 that the population of Sealand is usually around two people. Michael continues to operate a family like fishing business out of Suffolk.
I was going to ask about food, but yeah, you're in the sea. That's a lot of seafood.
But he lives and operates, I mean, not lives full time, but he has a business in Suffolk in England where
exchange British money.
I would think so.
Okay. Which I guess is fair. Like, I mean, they're international currencies. You can, whatever.
Yeah.
But.
Right. I would point out too that like, Sealand has relied on the British government at times. In 2006, they needed the British Air Force to actually send helicopters and air rescue them because part of the building caught on fire from electrical fire. A British tugboat had to put out the fire as well.
Shouldn't your own right. resources solve that? Oh, you don't have any control
on person. The Pirate Bay, like the globally known website for pirate content on BitTorrent, actually tried to purchase Sealand in 2007. The Bateses had put it up for sale for $900 million between 2007 and 2010. So the Pirate Bay tried to purchase it as basically the place where they could operate from their perspective and have their data centers and whatever else. Now, again, I don't think Britain would have hesitated,
right?
But to say not, that's not happening. But the point is, it didn't actually happen. They actually have their own international soccer team and other international sports that they participate in. Yes, they hire people from other countries to go represent them.
Oh, I was like, do you put one person on the field? How does this guy make money? Is it the fishing business?
It is the merchandising business. So you can go on their website, you can get your own passport, you can get their currency, you can get flags, you can get, you're looking at how to do this. But yeah, you can basically buy a bunch of Sealand stuff, and I guess they take all sorts of currencies, and they make money off of it that way. Before I forget too, Achenbach, to finish his story, once he was released, he actually, fled back to Germany and created his own government called the Sealand Rebel Government, or the Sealandic Rebel Government in Exile, based in Germany. So he continues to claim that he is prime minister of Sealand, even though he is in exile.
That's amazing. Yeah. I'm on sealandgov.org.
Yep.
And you can become gov.org. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can become a lord, a lady, a baron.
Oh, you get a title. You get titles, yeah.
A baron or a baroness. Guess how much that costs?
How much would it cost me to become a baroness?
$44.99.
Baroness?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
I can steal.
Yeah. And it's also nice that they, just by the fact that I can do that.
And the country's national motto is E Mare Libertas, from the sea, freedom.
Yeah, it's impressive, right? No, so Sealand is definitely the most well known.
Interesting. I thought it would have more people just based on it being well known, but yeah, I guess practicality is resonates more so with the general population.
They don't have a lot of space.
I know. It's just you can't have anyone. Yeah, there. It's pretty small.
Yeah, I mean there are ones that are a little bigger, so. I got two that are a little bigger, and then I want to end on a Seattle-based thing.
Okay.
The global country of world peace is a country without borders for peace-loving people everywhere.
Oh, that's basically me. Do we not have a location, and it's just anyone who identifies?
No, you're going to love it. It was created by a yogi, though. So
was it a white yogi?
No, actually, yeah. It was declared by Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. In 2000, he was an Indian yoga guru who died in 2008, but he was actually known for developing and popularizing transcendental meditation.
Oh, okay.
And the nation, or the global country world peace nation, tried to buy or lease land from many different sovereign countries. It is currently governed by Maharaja Tony Nader, who is a Lebanese neuroscientist. He's a researcher, university president, and he has a PhD from MIT.
Holy shit.
Yeah, this guy seems kind of incredible, but he's also Maharaja Tony Nader of Global Country World Peace. So it's, yeah.
Any relation to Meta World Peace?
not by blood.
I mean, I know we kind of bring this up, any kind of overlap or when it reminds me of other subcultures, but I mean, it reminds me of the retconners, the very first one law of one. Oftentimes, something that seems a little outlandish, you have really incredibly smart, talented people who identify or, are part of the movement.
Yeah, it's funny because there is this presumption that having that educational background means you're not necessarily going to have things that are so outside of the norm of society, right? And
right.
It's just not the case in all these ones that we've discussed so far.
Exactly.
The Global Country of World Peace's capitals, there's a couple, but specifically is one I like called Maharishi Vedic City in Iowa.
Vedic City.
Vedic City? Yeah. Thank you. Maharishi Vedic City in Iowa. So it is a 3.36 square mile planned community. It has something, I don't have the numbers in front of me anymore, but it was something like 200 something people that live there. The city plan and the buildings like architecture are based on a quote, an ancient system of architecture and design discovered in ancient Sanskrit texts that were revived by the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi.
So do you know, is there any overlap? Is this distinctly different from, I'm thinking of truly like cults, but compounds, like there are, you know, communities of people, they live in a compound, very similar, like maybe of 3 acres or something. They govern themselves, usually live off the land. Oftentimes there's some cultish aspect to it. Do they consider themselves a sovereign nation too? Is there overlap there? Or is that kind of distinctly different?
They consider themselves a sovereign nation. Now, I don't think that they necessarily consider their territory as like, it's
like a micronation.
Yeah. Like I think this is where you get, things get confusing between nation and state and country, right? Like those three things technically mean different things, but like, as a nation, as a group of people, they believe in themselves. They have self-sovereignty over that.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the state, the geographical boundaries that they occupy, I think they understand that they're still in the United States of America in this case, right? They work with like venture capitalists, for example, that who helped fund and create their community. They like in 2004, they had something like $200 million of revenue from venture capital to create this community.
Yep.
And the idea, the reason venture capital was interested was because they were creating this, you kind of alluded to this, like an quote unquote organic community,
right?
Which is where they're growing these foods and that food is then getting sold to Whole Foods and other businesses, right? And so there is like, there's economic incentive for other people to pay a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like go down the rabbit hole too far in this, but like I didn't get the sense it was cultish so much that it was communal.
Yeah, like right? That. No, that sounds more relatable. Like I think that happens too, where you have people who kind of just want to live off the earth and, you know, be a little more sustainable, and they're intentional in that way. I'm thinking of like true. I guess I really am thinking of cults, like the compound, and you like find out these people really haven't been in normal society and don't know.
Yeah, I don't get the sense that it's like that at all. They're clearly just more. It's a yuppie community is how I would think about it, right? Like they were one of the first cities in the United States to ban synthetic pesticides and fertilizers, things like that, right? It's just very much a community that is very interested in.
It's an eco-friendly community.
There it is. You got it.
Nailed it.
Very interested in the land. And that's my segue to get to people who aren't interested in the land, but interested in space.
Spaceman. Space guy. Good space
good
guy.
Good space guy? No, that's just a guy running for office in Seattle. But the micronation of Asgardia is also known as the Space Kingdom of Asgardia, or Asgardia, the Space Nation.
Haven't white people colonized enough places on this planet? Like, really?
They are a micronation formed by a group of people who launched a satellite into Earth orbit.
Wait, really?
They literally, they paid to get on somebody's rocket to launch their satellite, but they have a satellite in Earth's orbit and they have declared sovereignty over the space occupied by and contained within that satellite.
It's a really small amount.
So far. They have adopted a constitution and intend to access outer space free of the control of existing nations. They want to establish a permanent settlement on the moon by 2043. Good luck. And yeah, basically the idea is that space is going to be a territory where they can have sovereignty without the laws and restrictions of the government. Of the governments of the United States, not governments of the United States, governments of the Earth.
That's so annoying. Like, I know with, you know, within each topic, with each subculture and the different facets therein, we tend to have different levels of openness. And, yeah. you know, oftentimes, you know, we scrutinize it, but we can empathize and understand. I am sorry, but like the environmentalist in me is just like, fuck the people who want to
space.
I like fuck the people who want to colonize space. I'm like, sorry, like, how about taking care of this planet first? Like, have we not had enough? So we want to go off and ruin another planet? Like, we haven't done enough damage to the planet we live on? Fuck that. Like, it, I mean, it just screams privilege and like, oh, I need to go to outer space. Like, fuck off. Who says who?
Well, I would say that 500,000 plus people disagree with you.
I could give a fuck.
Because that is the amount of people who were invited to register for citizenship in 2016 and did so. That there were vetting requirements that got added after the fact, though. So they got down in 2017 to about 210,000 people that they have approved for citizenship.
What's wrong with the other 290,000 people?
That's a great question. Maybe
I would like to know.
Maybe they have too passionate opinions about the Earth, Brenna.
God.
This sounds like someone who applied for citizenship and just got rejected and has a strong...
No, it just like reeks of like privilege. I fucking hate it.
I'm pretty
like,
sure it is run by a billionaire. So
me unsurprised.
So you can kind of see the spectrum of these, right? So I did go to look for, are there any from our local community of Seattle that exist? And yes, I think there's lots of people declared sovereignty over their backyard or that kind of thing. So whatever. But the one that seems to be the most famous for whatever reason is the archipelago of Tui Tui of the Joyous Lake, which is a Lake Union floating home that seceded in 1985 to become its own micronation. And you can actually visit their website. It is still up on a website called angelfire.com for those of you from the 90s who remember Angel Fire, GeoCities, Tripod, and all that. So yes, they still have an Angel Fire website where you can purchase stamps from the archipelago of Tui Tui of the Joyous Lake.
Wow.
They consider themselves a member nation of the International Council of Independent States. So as you kind of started this earlier in this episode, that's the kind of like their version of a UN, right? For these micronations, but they're a member of that. And it is currently under the benevolent rule of Ko Taiyis, dogfish and dragonfly. Taiyi is a Chinook Wawa word for chief.
So these are indigenous people?
So I tried to find out who Dogfish and Dragonfly were, and a very old like newspaper article suggests that their names are Janet Yoder and Robert Rudin.
God, white people. Can't with you guys sometimes. I'm on Reddit kind of like looking at it, and it says, yeah, the internet doesn't have a lot of information.
Yeah. You probably found the same post I did.
Yeah. Someone says, knowing nothing about this, crazy persons thinks they can secede. U.S. government ignores their bullshit. More at 11.
Basically, yeah. It looks like that it was probably a property dispute with their landlord at the time and the owner of their mortgage, right? And so please look less annoyed.
I don't like,
but I mean, this, you know, this is kind of full circle. Like a lot mm-hmm. of this is I don't want to deal with whatever in society. And so I'm just going to declare myself sovereign and don't have to do this.
Should I just stop paying my mortgage and say I'm a sovereign nation? I don't owe money to anybody. I just live here.
So that's a great question. And if you would like to consider to do that, there is a subreddit that can help you declare your own micronation.
Really? What's it called?
r/micronation. It's got like 5,000 members. It is a subreddit that I think, just like reading, especially like their wiki and FAQ, like they get it that it's like a fun exercise and right. not something super serious. I was kind of like assuming to be almost go the other way and they'd be like really buying
the really
into
intense
it.
People.
But it is kind of, it seems like they, not tongue in cheek, but like recognizing why people do it, but at the same time recognizing your land is within a macronation's land. So like
my ideas on Cascadia, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
he's
exactly
fun to romanticize and imagine about, but you know, it's just yep. really impractical.
And so you can go check that out. They have a lot of people, like a lot of interesting about people starting their own micronations, and I found other, like, many, somebody who had a micronation in, basically there was a question in there about anybody who had micronations in Washington State. And somebody was asking it because, quote, they needed some allies nearby. Not because we need help or anything, but I think it'd be nice if we had someone nearby. I'd also like it if there was a nation willing to meet up one day. Since I haven't done that before, I think it would be fun. Trying to establish relations with other micronations within the Seattle region.
And should I post and meet up with this person?
Maybe. One person did say, Kimbrun claims Eastern Oregon as the territory of Waregon, so we're your southern neighbor. So there are people that you could interface with or establish diplomatic relations with if you were to create a micronation. In order to find out how, though, the micronation subreddit wiki actually recommends a BBC program. It was a six episode program from the mid 2000s called How to Start Your Own Country. It was created and presented by a kind of journalist comedian named Danny Wallace. It's actually really entertaining.
Did you watch the whole thing?
I have watched half of it so far.
Okay.
But it's on YouTube. You can find it. It's from the BBC. And basically, it walks through him starting his own country in his flat in Bow, London. So he's creating his own country inside of his apartment. And he creates a country called Lovely. spoilers, but within the first episode, he investigates territory of his own country by visiting Sealand. He meets with a couple people, including one who claims to own the moon. He invades another micronation called Eel Pie Island, but he leaves after the police are called. He makes friends with a general of the British Army, and he eventually decides upon the area of his own flat, his own apartment, as his territory, and makes a declaration of independence, which he then gives to then Prime Minister Tony Blair.
Amazing.
So I recommend it. It's a good way to kind of, bring this home and just kind of see how fun it is.
I'll give it a watch.
And that's micronations. If you have your own micronation that you'd like to give us a passport to, because, we like to travel, please feel free to tell us. We're on Instagram at Subsecurity Podcast. Our Twitter handle is at Subsecurity Pod. We're online, the webs, on subsecurity.com. And you can also email us at subsecurity@gmail.com. Our intro and outro music is the instrumental of We're Better Together by Go Mordecai. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.